The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Trump is running as an autocrat, full stop.
The commander-in-chief has the final say. There's a risk that there will be orders issued that really fly in the face of that traditional independence, that take the military into areas that they have traditionally avoided, domestic affairs, law enforcement and the policing of mass protests, or even the conduct of elections. That is frightening. That does start to turn us into more of an autocratic military-run society, and that is truly frightening.
You know, somewhere deep down, he is just a scared 77-year-old man. You know, toughest guy I've ever met, notwithstanding. He's also someone that has watched a whole bunch of people in his orbit go to actual prison or jail.
I don't think it's hyperbolic to say this genuinely could be the last Democratic election we ever have.
You're right.
Listen to what he says. He's telling you. Dictators aren't a dictator for one day, and then it's let the people decide.
No, and I'm going to tell you, as vice president, I've now met with over 150 world leaders, presidents, prime ministers, chancellors, and kings. World leaders have come up to me expressing their real concern.
In the second term, he won't be talked out of it. So what do I mean by a different type of government? I want you to imagine for a second, Willie, if you called 911, and instead of them saying, what's your emergency, they said, Willie, did you vote Democrat? Or did you vote Republican? That's what Trump wanted to do on a red state by blue state basis. If there was a tornado or a hurricane or a terrorist attack, Trump wanted to withhold aid from blue states to get leverage and give aid to red states to reward them for fealty. Made decisions on the basis of personal self-interest, but also made decisions very recklessly that put lives in danger. I did not expect, as a lifelong conservative, to go work for a Republican president who didn't want to stand behind law enforcement officers, openly attacked law enforcement officers, openly blasted the free and open press, you know, abrogated free trade agreements, backed away from our allies in NATO. This was a guy who, in my eyes, was not a conservative, and in fact, was behaving in the least conservative way possible. And again, if you think that first term was bad, my message would be, you ain't seen nothing yet.
I mean, pretty obviously, what Israel is doing is not working. There is not, it's 6 months. Hamas is still in the field, still a fighting force. And meanwhile, there are very high costs to civilians and passersby. This is not a successful operation yet.
Here, Netanyahu is a one-man wrecking crew for Israel's national security. And I say that because he is destroying the support for Israel around the world. Yes, it has to win the war. And yes, you can have two things be true at the same time. What Hamas did was unspeakable. Of course they should be destroyed. But it also is unspeakable that you can have the exact ability to take out an Iranian leader in an embassy in Damascus with a drone and then somehow kill aid workers. And somehow, well, we just don't know how that happened. It was terrible. We're sorry.
What I will tell you is I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving here, et cetera. So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire.
Hotter than expected, 3.5. This is three tenths hotter than we looked at in the rearview mirror, 3.2.
Regardless of what the Fed does, we're going to end up with sticky inflation for longer.
Adam, the core number is up 3.8%. That is a big number.
Yeah, year over year, there's no question. That's a tenth higher than we thought. 3.8%, that's a little ugly. I will admit that.
This just in, inflation is headed in the wrong direction right now. The latest consumer price report in just out shows prices up 3.5%. This over same time last year.
Pretty well there. This is moving in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So a 3.5% on an annual basis. To put that in context, that is hotter than what we were expecting.
Inflation's at 3.2%. It's higher than it was in January. Are there any concerns that the disinflation we saw last year is starting to stall out?
So look, I'm going to say that this is a president that is doing everything that we can to fight inflation, right? To build an economy from the bottom up, middle out. And we've been pretty consistent about that. And over what we have seen over the past several months is that inflation is down 2/3 and core inflation is at the lowest since May of 2021.
As the world burns, you've got the fake. There's plenty of Trump derangement syndrome on display every day. That's a given. We could put together the opening of that cold open. We could put that together every single day. But you've got the fake president out there speaking gibberish, and then runaway inflation, the invasion at the border. The country, as I say, going up in flames. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program every weekday morning at 11:05 a.m. in the Central Time Zone of the United States. Just go to TrumpetDaily.com, or you can go to the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. We had a little bit of trouble with the Rumble feed yesterday. Hopefully everything is A-OK for today's show. Speaking of Rumble, by the way, we have the evening replay on LFA TV. That's Live from America TV. That also is a Rumble channel. And just from perusing that site or that channel earlier today, it looks like our programs still are getting 7,000, 8,000 views over there each night. So that's just a nice add-on to what we get through the other platforms through the day. So a $2 trillion deficit, I mean, it's taking its toll. The figures were in yesterday. Inflation is still off the charts. Most of the figures, I guess it was, what, 3.5% year over year? You just look at the cost for everything since Joe Biden took office, since the illegitimate administration took charge there in the early part of 2021. Just to cover the breaking news from yesterday first, this is the New York Post. U.S. inflation spikes 3.5% in March, casting further doubts on Fed's rate cuts. It says here the figure marks the highest year-over-year increase since December, when inflation came in at 3.4%. March's Consumer Price Index, a measure of changes in the cost of everyday goods and services, came in a tick higher than the 3.4% headline. There's a website. It's, what is it, Biden Inflation Tracker. It says since Biden took office, Americans have faced increasingly higher prices for food, gasoline, and other common household items. I mean, in one sense, I don't need to even read this to you if you're an American, because you know this. You know when you go out to a restaurant. You know when you go to fill up your car with fuel. You know when you pay your electricity bill. It's just right across the board. It says, while prices have been going up, wages have been going down. Never mind what the regime tells you. Yeah, we're fighting inflation. And there's more jobs and wages are going up. They're lying. The jobs, as we covered last week, they're for migrants and for federal employees. Not for you. Not for you. Your taxes are going up. Your wages are going down. And the cost for everything's going up. Inflation is just another way for the government to tax you. They print off $2 trillion and they pay for all of their expensive programs. It's a way to generate income for the federal government. And the people in the swamp, as I covered last week, they're lining their pockets. Nancy Pelosi's net worth, what did it go from $160,000 to hundreds of millions of dollars? It pays to be just a lowly representative in the House. The House of Representatives. Who knew
that you could receive millions and millions of dollars for doing what she does. What does she do? I'll leave you to answer that. The change since January 2021, real disposable income per capita down 7.5%. Home ownership affordability, that's down 36%. Credit card debt, that's up 38%. And monthly savings, that's gone down 79%. Does that sound like a healthy, robust economy? You know, much was made of the Arizona ruling, the abortion ban. Oh, that's going to hurt Trump. It's a swing state. Even Carrie Lake came out and said she didn't agree with it. So there's a lot of pressure for people to conform with the abortion lobby. You don't want to mess with that. I mean, this is what the radical left really, I mean, this is becoming, I guess, right at the top of the agenda for them. They're campaigning on abortion. We've got to make abortion available to everybody. I don't think that's going to be as big of an issue as the radical left hopes that it will be come November. But this website again, the Biden inflation tracker, changes since January of 2021. The cost for flour up 37%, eggs 35% increase, baby food 27% increase, bread further down 25% increase, poultry 23%, dairy 23%, and on it goes. That's just the prices you're paying at the supermarket. What about home heating oil? That's up 61%. Diesel fuel, 55%. Since the fake president came into office. Vehicle insurance, 41%. Gasoline, 37%. Electricity, 27% higher. Natural gas, 27% higher. Pet food. You want to feed your dog? You want to feed your cat? It's 24% higher than it was just a little over 3 years ago. 24%. Do you think Americans are feeling it? Of course they are. Airline fares up 21%. Airfare 21%. And on it goes. And the numbers just keep getting worse. And I mean, I saw several clips this morning saying there's no way that this could reverse into Biden's direction or a favorable direction for Biden in just 6 months. This is what we're going into the presidential election knowing. This is how it's been. This is the cost. What a heavy cost that it is for just printing off $2 trillion extra every year. A $2 trillion deficit and with no end in sight. America, as you know, America's under attack. It certainly is under attack. I'll get to an article later in this segment about America's broken will. I mean, look at what our sins have brought upon us. And again, we often expose the radical left, that Marxist agenda, as well we should. And that's really at the heart of this book, America Under Attack. But more broadly, I mean, you have to look at the sickness. You have to look at the sins from head to toe. They're all over the place. But the attack certainly is real. The communist, the radical Marxist attack is certainly real as well. You may have seen the story of the NPR whistleblower. He worked for NPR, and he explained in an interview how that Trump derangement syndrome, I mean, it changed. NPR has always been on the left side of the spectrum, and it's totally funded by U.S. taxpayers. But now we know just how horrible it was because of this whistleblower. This is from the Free Press. It says, it's true, NPR has always had a liberal bent, but during most of my tenure here, an open-minded, curious culture prevailed. We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk, activist, or scolding. I can remember an NPR report. We played it for one of our classes here years ago about the spread of STDs and promiscuous sex among young people. I think it was some community in Georgia. It was powerful, and it really did expose sin and how fast it was spreading and hurting people. There's not much of that anymore. Now it's just radical leftists trying to attack Trump, like you heard at the opening of the cold open there. In recent years, however, that has changed. Today, those who listen to NPR or read its coverage online find something different. The distilled worldview of a very small segment of the U.S. population. You see this everywhere. You see it at the New York Times. You see it at MSNBC. You see it at CNN, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times. NPR is no different, except that it's taxpayer-funded. It's like the BBC over in the UK. People have to pay for that left-wing propaganda. Persistent rumors that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election became the catnip that drove reporting. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Trump's most visible antagonist, Representative Adam Schiff. You see, it was bad before Trump, but then Trump came along, and then they became unhinged. Sound familiar? Listen to Jesse Waters as he reported on this last night, clip 3.
NPR used to be a player in the media. They were always a little left, but they had journalistic chops, kind of. And some of their material was thought-provoking, I guess. But over the last decade, NPR isn't even taken seriously by anyone. Last year, NPR canceled shows, laid off staff, and now only 30% of their own audience trusts them. How'd this happen? Well, one senior editor who's worked there for 25 years is confessing. Yuri Berlinder, a classic lib, says NPR has gone way too far. In an interview, he revealed how NPR corrupted itself in 2016.
I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't. And it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America. I think after a while, we started covering Trump in a way that like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents.
Just try to damage Trump's presidency. That's what they're now known for. Attack Trump. Get Trump. Trump derangement syndrome. It's real. It's real. They thought Hillary was going to win, and what did he say there? They were shocked. They were disturbed. They were distraught when the miracle in 2016 happened. And that just changed everything for the worse. Going back to this article that he wrote, that Berliner guy, speaking of Adam Schiff. Schiff, who was the top Democrat on the House Intel Committee, became NPR's guiding hand, its ever-present muse. Schiff, Adam Schiff, the serial liar, if you can believe it. Says, by my count, NPR hosts interviewed Schiff 25 times about Trump and Russia. He lied about Trump-Russia collusion, and NPR had him on 25 times to spew those lies. Well, I've got the evidence. I've seen it. Yeah, he's a Russian agent. It says, during many of those conversations, Schiff alluded to purported evidence of collusion. The Schiff talking points became the drumbeat of NPR news reports. It says, but when the Mueller report found no credible evidence of collusion, NPR's coverage was notably sparse. Russiagate quietly faded from our programming, just like it did from MSNBC, just like it did from CNN. They just quietly move on, exposed as liars, as frauds, but not held to account. And so they quietly move on to the next hoax. Listen to one more bit from Jesse last night, clip four.
At one point, I got so frustrated with what I saw was the sort of the lack of different perspectives in our coverage that I decided to look at voter registration among our staff. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, 0 Republicans. I presented this at a all hands or a large news meeting. And I said, hey, look, something's gone wrong here.
No Republicans, no problem. They didn't care there were no Republicans on the payroll. In fact, they preferred it. Remember, NPR is a taxpayer-funded news organization.
87 registered Democrats and 0, count them, 0 Republicans. How's that for fair and balanced? And then, like that first clip we played of Jesse, they're having to fire people because nobody's watching, nobody's listening. I mean, this just comes back to the point I made yesterday and the day before, that you've got all these people swinging into the Trump camp because these alternative sources, well, at least the other side, they're not alternative. They're the mainstream for sure. But they just live in an alternate universe. That's the point. They're not dealing with reality. $2 trillion deficit spending and people going to the grocery store and paying 30, 40, as much as 50% more than they were just 3 years ago? I mean, that's real. This is what every American is experiencing. And it's really spreading right around the world. I saw another article this morning about the rising inflation worldwide. What did Herbert Armstrong say about what would trigger that final prophesied resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire? He said it would be an economic crisis. We're certainly heading toward that. But how revealing, this NPR story. 87 Dems and 0 Republicans, and you're paying for it. U.S. taxpayers are paying for that propaganda. And paying for the fact that Schiff, Adam Schiff, is their go-to source. Michael Lind, this is at Tablet. He had a piece on Barack Obama, the dear leader, and how divided, how much division he caused. The divider in chief. That's what he came in 2009. He says, Lynn does at Tablet, is the United States a nation state in which there is an American people whose members have more in common with each other than merely being subject to the jurisdiction of American federal, state, and local governments? Or is the United States just a random agglomeration of tribes and individuals who share nothing except an agreement to abide by certain minimal rules? The answer is the latter, according to Barack Obama. This was at a fundraiser for the re-election campaign of Joe Biden. Barack Obama said, but what has always made America exceptional is this radical idea that you can get people from every corner of the globe. They don't look alike. They don't have the same name. They worship differently. They speak different languages. They have different cultural traditions. And somehow they're going to come together under a set of rules and we're all going to pledge. He says, that's our creed. This is the Obama doctrine. He wasn't quite as open with it when he was in the midst of his first and second term. But now, I mean, now the gates have swung wide open and everybody from all over the world is coming in to the United States. Muslims are heading to Dearborn, Michigan. And this is strengthening America. So says the dear leader. This is what the founders envisioned, right? It says here, Obama, to the contrary, Our creed is not that somehow a coherent national community spontaneously can arise by throwing together linguistic, religious, and cultural groups that share nothing in common other than commitment to a government charter. It says, if the U.S. population were divided three ways among German-speaking Amish, Arabic-speaking Muslims, and Chinese-speaking secularists, the country would quickly disintegrate, even if the three groups agreed on free elections and minimal civil rights. They think, yes, there are, I mean, there is something to be said for the melting pot, but the point of it is that you came in and you melted into the American creed. Obama says, let's bring in all the tribes and let them, they don't melt in, they don't blend in. They just stay within their tribe, just like the protesters in Dearborn saying, death to America, death to Israel. Is that healthy? Here Joe Biden is trying to secure their vote. He's pandering to America haters because he's got to win Michigan. Or he's paying off your student loan bill because he's got to win your, he's got to get back the vote from younger people that are peeling off toward Trump. That's really some sick behavior. All politics, these people that go on and on and on about Trump as the country goes up in flames. This article says the New Deal era, it says, finally brought Catholics and Jews into the American mainstream with the rejection of religious tests for identity in the American community. And the Civil Rights Revolution belatedly and thankfully abolished racial tests as well. But if manners and customs and common language and other elements of a common American culture are thrown out as well, what remains is more likely to be a failed state along the lines of Lebanon or Somalia rather than a flourishing democracy. That's where we're headed. A house divided. A house divided cannot stand. Jesus said that. So did Abraham Lincoln. So divided. And it's all part of the fundamental transformation. It's all part of the plan. He had to be, you know, he had to pretend that he was someone that he wasn't, Barack Obama, back in 2009, on through to his second term. But now he doesn't have to pretend anymore because the fake president takes all the hits. People are furious about inflation, about the invasion. But Barack Obama, he's just behind the scenes, in the basement, as he said he wanted to be when the fake president was on his way in. It says here, this is from America Under Attack, just a quote from this book. Again, if you don't have this book, call our operators today and request your free copy. There's no cost, no obligation. 1-866-930-3024. My father says, as president, Barack Obama passionately pursued his ambition to transform America, and he found formidable success. The transformation continues. It says here, let's start with one example. Many people said that electing and re-electing a black man to the most powerful office in the world would solve our nation's racial problems. It did the opposite. That's because Barack Obama actively fomented those problems, all of those shootings, killing police officers. Remember that? It was just happening every month. The Dallas massacre? How soon we forget? The dear leader out there just fomenting all of this hatred. This hatred for law enforcement, for local law enforcement. And they were being gunned down, particularly during his second term. And to hear these same people talking about how they're for law enforcement now, especially the Capitol Hill police. They can do no wrong because, well, the Trump supporters were trying to kill them. Even Karl Rove said that. There's a lot of propaganda that people have swallowed. President Obama repeatedly made public remarks on racially charged issues, remarks that increased people's mistrust of the police and eroded faith in the justice system. He said things that were provably false, but that played well to racist radicals. At one point, Obama said racism is a part of America's DNA. He's trying to bring the country together, right? That's what, look at what Joe Biden campaigned on, returning civility to the White House, if you can believe it. And here's this guy going on and on about half the country being Nazis. In the post-Obama America, mainstream media and radical Democrats continually accuse Republicans and everyday Americans of being racist. In almost every case, they are lying and they know they're lying. I mean, this is just one example of how the dear leader has divided the United States of America. My father had another piece. This was from 2020. America has been fundamentally transformed. That's at the Trumpet magazine. If you haven't subscribed to that, there's no cost or obligation for the Trumpet either. You can get the hard copy of that magazine in your mailbox every month. Just to call that same 800 number that I mentioned earlier. My father says when Barack Obama promised to fundamentally transform or change America during the 2008 presidential run, few people knew what he really meant. Now that he's out of office, it's becoming clearer all the time that the change he was talking about was something far more dangerous than many people assumed. I mean, I played that montage for you yesterday. There's commentators now all over the place that say America's being attacked, that we're being fundamentally transformed, that these communist forces are trying to destroy America as we know it. The communist infiltration, that's real as well. There's a chapter, and he was right. The communist infiltration of America is prophesied. Herbert W. Armstrong was talking about this back in the 1940s and 50s. And look at where we are today. Mr. Obama is contemptuously and openly discussing what he meant by fundamentally transforming America. Now that he's out of office, he tells us what his real goal was and still is, to completely tear down the system and remake it. I'll just back up because he's quoting from this Democrat donors gathering where Obama was out there speaking, not knowing everything was being recorded. It says here, Mr. Obama said that if Democrats want to be elected, they need to conceal their radical views. Quote, this is still a country that is less revolutionary than it is interested in improvement, he said. Obama says, even as we push the envelope and we're bold in our vision, we also have to be rooted in reality. The average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. So we've got to be subtle about it. We've got to be deceptive. That's what the dear leader was saying. I forget when this happened. He says this past November. So if the article's from 2020, it was probably 2019. This is the man still running the United States of America. This is the man who was attacking Donald Trump. This is the one, he's the one who pushes the buttons at NPR and the New York Times and everywhere else in the so-called mainstream. They swoon before Obama. That's the first chapter of America Under Attack. It's important that you understand the spiritual dimension behind all of this. The devil is real. He's the prince of the power of the air. He's the one trying to blot out even the name of Israel. He's the one carrying out this fundamental transformation. The God of this world, he's deceived. He's deceived the whole world. There was another whistleblower. Former FBI, current CIA officer says approximately 20 undercover agents were in the January 6th crowd. He boasts about taking away Alex Jones's money. He boasts. He's a deep stater. He's come forward just like the NPR guy and said, you know, our goal was to destroy Alex Jones. He's the right-wing commentator. They nearly did it. I mean, they've taken any fortune that he had, they've taken it. They've destroyed that. At least the man is still able to broadcast, but I'm sure they'd try to destroy that career as well if they could. An undercover video reveals former FBI officer and contracting CIA officer Gavin O'Blenis claiming that there were at least 20 FBI agents in the January 6th crowd. He also revealed that the agency was behind the lawsuit brought by Sandy Hook families against Alex Jones. In the end, he said the agency got what it wanted. They took all of his money. Sounds like a banana republic, doesn't it? It's here. The communists are in control. And this is why they're widening their investigation into the January 6th protest, putting great grandmas in jail. They have so much power, and they're going to do everything that they can in the next 6.5 months to maintain their hold on that power, to maintain their grip on that power. Should be an interesting, as I said yesterday, you better buckle up. And again, others like Newt Gingrich, I played that montage for you yesterday. They're warning. They're out there sounding the alarm, saying expect anything to happen. There's no limits. There's no limits on these communists. They'll do whatever it takes to get Trump, to destroy Trump. One last piece that I can zero in on this a little bit more tomorrow. But anyway, since I mentioned Trump, maybe we could play this clip from Vivek Ramaswamy. I think this was on Dave Rubin's show last week, clip 5.
And I think what Trump did is he provided a voice in a way that could actually have impact in a way that nobody had against the managerial machine. It wasn't against the radical left, just the radical left. Mm-hmm. It was against the entire machine itself that over the years, over the decades, had frankly been exploited by both sides. Mm-hmm. And he was the best chance we have been given in a generation or more, possibly a century or more, to say, I'm going to bring a baseball bat and tear the thing down. Now, I think that one of the things I have appreciated about getting to know Donald Trump better in the last, even recent months, is that he's ambitious about learning from that first term to say, okay, yes, we had a great first term, but what are we going to have learned about facing down that challenge of taking on a deep state that we're actually going to implement the second time around?
Lessons learned from the first term. That's what Vivek is saying. And we've made the point, of course, about how that even with the steal in 2020, the radical left stealing the election, just look at how God has used that to expose so much lawlessness, so much corruption, so much evil and filth. You know, even the concept from a biblical perspective, I covered this last week in Principles of Living, one of our classes here at the college, just that God wants us to, he told Israel, look, I want you to get in there and separate the holy from the profane. We don't want any mingling. You know, the Obama doctrine is everybody comes in. You know, if you're a terrorist from the Middle East, that's fine. Come on in. If you're a Venezuelan gang member, come on in. This is what gives America strength. If you're a radical Islamist, just come into Michigan. Move to Michigan and take to the streets and say death to America. That's healthy. They love the sickness and the division of it all. And they hate patriots. They hate MAGA. They hate anybody that would dare support Donald Trump or the Constitution. America's divided more than ever. I would say it's worse than the lead up to the Civil War. Look at the political sickness and division. God describes it perfectly in Isaiah 1. A sickness that runs from the top of the head right down to the toes. U.S. and Britain in prophecy, that comes to mind as well. This is up here, I believe. I'll get into this maybe more tomorrow when I get into the broken will piece that's over at the National Interest. But for now, if you don't have a copy of this book, make sure you call our operators and request your free copy, 1-866-930-3024. When we come back, we will conclude today's program with our Bible study segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
In the last couple Bible study segments, we've talked about just aiming to put God first in your life by praying first thing in the day. That passage in Luke 22 where Jesus told his disciples to rise up. They were all sleeping. He said, rise up and pray. And last time we went through those verses in Mark and Luke where it talks about Jesus Christ setting a good example with that, getting up a great while before day, before the day started. I think that's in Mark 1. And then heading up into a mountain, a solitary place where he could get in his prayers for the day. This is the example that Jesus set. Rise and pray. Last time I ended with Romans 12 and verse 12. You can just look at that on your own time. That's the verse where it says to be instant in prayer. To be instant. The word can mean, you know, quick, but also constant. In other words, you're just in the established habit of going to God for answers, for counsel, for direction, for guidance. This morning in doctrines class, I was talking about, you know, the pillar cloud that led the people of Israel in the wilderness. At night, it was a pillar of fire. And there's scriptures in the Old Testament that say it was always there. It was always visible. There was never a time in that 40-year period where the pillar was gone. That's a type. That's a type of Jesus Christ, the head of this church, the living Christ. He's alive. He's available. He knows. He can sympathize with us. I read through Hebrews 4. Last week on a program, God says, come boldly before that throne. I mean, look at what Jesus Christ cleared the way for. I mean, you can be reconciled to the Father and then really live by the life of Jesus Christ. Romans 5 and verse 10. Mr. Armstrong in that article, let God fight your battles. He said, look, are you close enough to God? Do you see God? Are you letting God lead you? Are you actually letting God fight those battles for you? So much of it comes down to our prayer life. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 5, pray without ceasing. Don't ever get out of the habit of your daily prayers. I mentioned the example in Daniel 6 and verse 10, just how faithful and devoted Daniel was to his prayer life, that he wouldn't even let a decree that banned prayer on penalty of death, if it was violated, he wouldn't let that interfere with his relationship with God. Daniel's relationship with God, that was the most important relationship he had. My father wrote this. This was some years ago in the Royal Vision. He said, "Our primary focus in life must be on how we talk to God in prayer. This is our number one priority. That's how we grow in God's royal family." See, the higher the value we place on prayer, the more fervent and energetic it will be. And then we'll begin to break through to God. And we'll begin to see there's definite answers to those prayers. May not always be the answer we're looking for, but God responds. God responds. The more effectual and fervent those prayers are, again, you want the combination. Put that high value on contact with God, and then the more effectual and fervent those prayers are, the more swift and dramatic the response from God will be. It's a beautiful cycle. Notice James 5 and verse 16. It says, "Confess your faults one to another and pray one for another that you may be healed." It says, "The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much." I mentioned to you the other day how I told the students that, you know, it's kind of surprising to see how many examples there are in Scripture of, you know, righteous individuals, Jesus Christ first and foremost, of just going outside and praying before God. I mentioned the example yesterday of Herbert Armstrong. He was out exercising behind the Fisher Farm back in the 1930s, and he saw this rock that became his prayer rock. He was outdoors. He was in a solitary place. I told the students, now don't all do it at once so that you have the security vehicle wondering why there's 60 young people outside praying and try to find a solitary place. But this is a beautiful campus. And just going outside and seeing God's creation, the birds and the animals and so on, all the growth, particularly at this time of year when the weather's nice as well. I mean, it's fine to pray in the prayer closet too. There's examples of that in Scripture. You know, going behind closed doors and crying out to God, not making a big public display of it, but finding that solitary place and then crying out to God with effectual, fervent prayers. Mr. Armstrong wrote this back in 1980. He said, "But as of the moment I write, there's not one thing I have had to rely on God for and ask Him for in prayer for myself and family or the wonderful work of His which He has committed to me that has not been answered." I mean, God answered all of His requests. And He made another statement in another article talking about how that, you know, he couldn't imagine God answering any prayer. That's just kind of a sleepy time prayer without the effectual fervency. Pour your hearts into it. Like it says, I mentioned Hebrews 4. Let's just read it. Hebrews 4, verse 14. It says, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession." We have a great high priest. He's passed into the heavens. He lives. He's been resurrected to life. He's at the right hand of God. He's our advocate when we sin. He lives to make intercession for us. Do we take advantage of that awesome power, that tremendous source of power, of spiritual energy, of understanding and depth and wisdom and love? Let us hold fast our profession. This is our profession. Elsewhere, it says it's our vocation. This is our job. We've been spending a lot of time in marriage and family of late, talking about how that marriage and family is a career. And you have to prepare for a career. You have to go through training. You have to receive education. You need knowledge. You need the know-how, as I often say when going through 1 Peter 3. And God provides all of that for us. What about more broadly, our spiritual profession or vocation? You know, really feasting on the Word of God. Just like the Israelites of old, they actually consumed manna from heaven. It was a total miracle. And God rained it down in just the perfect amount for them to have it every single day. They had to go out and do their part. They had to faithfully follow God's instructions. But God provided everything that they needed. He was so detailed and precise with it as well. And He'll be that way with our prayers. If we get detailed and specific, if we're effectually and fervently offering that that spiritual sacrifice, that spiritual offering, Paul says in verse 15, "For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin." He's a great high priest. He's perfect, and He's an advocate when we sin. He's everything that we need. Verse 16, it says, "Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace," through prayer, obviously, "that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." We do need help. In time of need, God says, go boldly before that throne. Bring God into any and all difficulties, trials, tests. God does allow those. And with them, there's always a way of escape. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. He doesn't say, I'll remove the trial. He says, you're going to go through the trial, but I'll go right through it with you. Just like I did with Daniel's three friends in the furnace. Just like I did with Daniel in the lion's den. I'll be with you. That doesn't mean we're going to live forever in this fleshly frame. It's given to man once to die. And then after that, the resurrection, we need to take the long view. I mean, if we're sealed, if we die, whenever that comes physically, if we die in the faith, we've made it. We're going to live forever in God's kingdom. We're going to live for eternity. It's not even worthy to compare the infirmities or the trials and tests of this life. It's not even worthy to compare it to the glorious inheritance that we're soon to receive. That's Romans 8 and verse 18, I believe. What an awesome calling we have. Mr. Armstrong wrote it, or at least he titled one of his books, The Incredible Human Potential. It is incredible. This life is a launching pad. It takes us right out into the universe, right into God's kingdom, right into God's family. That's something worth preparing for. That's something that's worth being, you know, effectual and fervent about with respect to our prayer, our contact with God, our relationship with God. What was it my father said? It's the most important relationship that we have. I lost track of that particular page, but I'll come back to it at a later time if we continue on with this same theme. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.